For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hey everyone, hope you're doing well. Welcome back to a brand new edition of the Ariel Helwani Basketball Show. And how lucky are you? 2 episodes this week. Can't stop, won't stop. Just a couple days ago, we dropped a really great chat with the one and only Sue Bird, the recently retired Sue Bird, arguably one of the greatest women's basketball players of all time. It was a really enjoyable chat. I really loved talking to her, and I think she could have a great career as an analyst, but it sounds like she wants to be an owner of an NBA and WNBA team. So good luck to her on that. You can check that out on the feed. Today's episode features a 14-year NBA veteran. He's played for the likes of the Pistons, the Hawks, the Rockets, the Nuggets, the Kings, the Lakers, and 14-year NBA TV analyst and radio as well. He is John Barry, of course, the brother of one Brent Barry, the son of the Hall of Famer Rick Barry. A great run working for ESPN on television and on the radio. Is kind of out of the media game on a consistent basis right now, but always appreciated his work, told it like it is. And as you'll see and hear in this interview, no different these days. Talked about his career, talked about playing on those Sacramento Kings teams in the late 90s with the likes of Chris Webber and Jason Williams, also playing with Kobe Bryant in his second season. Talked about his transition to TV and wanting to be a broadcaster before he was an NBA player. That was his original dream, amazingly. Talked about, you know, the difference between the ESPN studio team and the TNT studio team. And he even dropped a very bold prediction on the Eastern Conference Finals. You're going to want to hear this, one that not a lot of people are making right now. So it was a really great chat with John Barry. I enjoyed it. I hope you do as well. Sit back, relax. Here's my conversation with John Barry. All right, it's a great pleasure to be joined by 14-year NBA veteran, longtime NBA analyst, the great John Barry, joining us just moments before he's about to take some money from Chandler Parsons on the golf course. Look at you. You look like you're about to play in the Masters. I think you're actually rocking Masters gear as we speak.
Well, we can only hope I take his money. His handicap is a little bit too low, or too high, excuse me, too high. But we'll see. We're out here at Sherwood in L.A., and I play with him almost every day, so we'll have some fun. It's great, great to be out there.
Every day you play?
Every day that ends in Y.
Wow, okay, well done. I was going to ask you off the top before I knew that you were coming to us from the golf course. You know, I feel like you were a fixture. I used to see you on TV all the time, listen to you on the radio all the time, but you've taken a bit of a step back from the limelight. Conscious decision on your part?
Yeah, so I finished with radio 2 years ago. So I did 14 years I played, and I did 14 years of broadcasting. And as I look back, basically 51 years of my life, I was involved in the NBA. Because when I was born, my dad was in the NBA. And then it was all NBA. So I gotten away from it, and it's fine, you know. And I thought that I would not watch, but I find myself watching and reading and doing all the same stuff that I did when I was working. It's obviously something that's been a part of my life, and it's something that I dearly miss. I got to be honest. I love the game. I love the competition. Loved a lot of people that I got to work with and be around, and I do miss that. But it's been fun to get on the other side too.
And so, when you say miss, do you mean miss the playing or miss the broadcasting?
I miss both. I miss the checks when I play.
Sure, sure.
Mostly,
yeah.
But both. You know, playing was the ultimate. You know, just to compete against the guys that I had to compete against on a nightly basis back in the 90s. It was a treat. I mean, you think about 450 guys basically in the world were in the NBA, and I was one of them. And as you get out of the game, you know, when you're playing, you want to be the best, and you think you should be the playing more or doing this or doing that. And then you step back and say, you know, I was one of 450 guys that were in the NBA in the world. And, you know, people criticize. I just hear Monday morning quarterbacks when you're, you know, when I'm here around the grill at the club, and oh, that guy stinks and he stinks and he. Well, he's one of 450 guys that's doing that job, so he can't be that bad. So you get an appreciation of guys that make it, because I do know how hard it is.
Milwaukee, Golden State, Atlanta, L.A., Sacramento, Detroit, Denver, Atlanta again, Houston. Favorite city to play in?
Well, that's tough. Sacramento is kind of where I arrived. Started in Milwaukee, didn't get much of an opportunity there. Played a little bit in Golden State, then I didn't get any opportunity in LA. And then I got to Sacramento and Rick Adelman, when we brought in Jason Williams and Chris Webber and Vlade Divac and Peja Stojakovic, it was just kind of they had no idea what was going to happen. And we struck lightning in a bottle and became one of the most exciting teams in the league. And I got a chance to be a part of the bench and played, you know, over 20 minutes a night. And that's kind of where my career started. So Sacramento, very dear to me. Loved playing in Houston. Had probably my best statistical years in Detroit. But, you know, I met great, great people everywhere, every stop that I made.
Just a couple of weeks ago on this show, we spoke to Jason Williams. And, you know, as a kid who grew up in the 90s, I don't know if there was anyone cooler than White Chocolate, right? Like, as a white kid, like, I tried to emulate him, right? Like, he was just it was like him and Eminem that we looked up to, right? Could you tell me what it was like just being a part of that crew, because the whole squad was just so cool. The cowbell, everything about it just seemed cool.
Yeah, it was amazing how it came together. I mean, Jeff Petrie was our GM, who was a great player back in the day with Portland. Rick Adelman, great coach at Portland, had just come over. And I don't think they really had any idea what was going to happen. We bring in those guys I mentioned. Chris Webber gets traded. Chris Webber initially had no desire to be in Sacramento. He's kind of a big city guy coming from DC. And Vlade came in, and Peja was a great draft pick. And then Hito Turkoglu eventually, Jay Will. It was amazing. I mean, we got to camp. I remember flying out there. My son was just born, and I had a non-guaranteed contract. And let me tell you, a non-guaranteed contract in the NBA is not a lot of fun. You go there and you have to beg a coach to talk to you, because they have nothing vested in you. You're just there trying to make a team. And I'm not saying they disrespect you or anything, but they're dealing with their guys that they're paying, because those are the guys that they need to play well. So anyway, I had a non-guaranteed contract, and I get on my flight from Atlanta, and Vern Maxwell's on my flight. And I'm like, oh, geez. I mean, great. Vern was a great NBA player in my estimation. So I had no idea he was one of the guys that was trying out for the team. He had a non-guaranteed deal too. We had 8 2 guards there for two spots, and Vern's on my flight. So I'm like, well, we probably got 7 people for one spot now, because I'm going to assume Vern Maxwell's in there. So I don't know. I just remember getting out there and just totally focusing in and having, you know, one of my best camps ever, and wound up making the team along with Vern. It was me and Vern, and just, it was magic from them. Sacramento is an unbelievable basketball town. Their fans are second to none. And we had a ball.
And, you know, I read those cities that you played in and you kind of laughed. I wasn't trying to, you know, accentuate the fact that you played for a lot of teams. But what's interesting about that is you weren't traded often. It was a lot of free agent deals. You were traded from Sacramento. When you got the call that you were being traded to Detroit, considering the special feeling surrounding that team, can you tell me what that felt like some 22 years ago?
Yeah, that was brutal. I was on the ninth hole of a golf course about an hour and a half from Atlanta. And I remember somebody came driving out, a couple of the pros in a golf cart. And they're like, yeah, Mr. Berry's emergency. You got to call your wife. I was married at the time. And so I call and my wife is crying. And I'm like, what's going on? So I'm thinking something happened to my sons or something. She's like, you got traded. I'm like, what? And I'm like, where? And she goes, Detroit. And I just dropped the phone. And I was like devastated. I mean, Sacramento, which I grew up an hour and a half from there. So I had tons of friends, family. And Detroit was terrible. They had won, I think, 28 games the year before. And I remember it ruined my back nine. Let's just put it that way. I wasn't too happy.
You did end up going to Denver afterwards and you were there. It's kind of interesting that we're talking now, not only because of Denver making it to the finals for the first time in their history, but also because you were there during Carmelo Anthony's rookie year and he just announced his retirement. Could you tell me what was Melo like as a rookie? I was at Syracuse when they won in 2003. I was a student at Syracuse when he was there as well. I was a junior. He was a freshman, of course. What was he like as a rookie in that year, 2003, 2004?
Well, first thing, he's a man of his word, because when he came in, one of the first things he told us was, if we make the playoffs, I'm buying everybody a Rolex. And we made the playoffs somehow, some way. Well, he had a lot to do with it. The guy is, he's just one of those kind of born scorers. I mean, just an incredible ability to score the basketball. He was a lot more athletic, I think people gave him credit for. He had a great, like, second jump. If he missed a shot, he could go up and get it again. Really, you know, he was just really good around the basket, strong. And he bought us a Rolex because we made the playoffs somehow. We had a bunch of misfits there too. It was a lot like Sacramento. Marcus Camby came in. We had Vashawn Leonard, myself, Earl Boykins, Andre Miller, just kind of a osh-posh pool of guys. And I believe they won 18 games the year before Carmelo's rookie year. And then when we came in, and we won 43. Jeff Bezdelic did a hell of a job with that team. And we got in the playoffs, and a lot of that had to do with Carmelo Anthony, who was one of the great scorers the league's ever seen.
I'm seeing some people this week debate if he's a Hall of Famer. This seems bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Your take?
Top 10 scorer, I think you're in.
Yeah.
I mean, 20 years. I know. I think, did he ever make a conference final maybe once?
Once, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that hurts you if you don't win a title. I get it. But I think it's pretty safe to say. And you know what people forget is the Hall of Fame is also based on your college career.
True.
So he's in.
Yes.
He won a call. You were there.
Yeah.
He won, and he was the best player on that team. That gets you in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
I know you were only with him for a season, but, you know, maybe towards the end of his run with New York and then afterwards, like, he was kind of being branded as a bad teammate, didn't want to adjust to his role and his skill set. Did you ever feel like he was a bad teammate?
When I play with him, no, absolutely not. And look, it's hard for guys that are star players that are used to scoring upwards to 30 points a game to take a backseat role. I mean, that's difficult for them to do. It's like, that's what I would wish every star come play off the bench and see what we deal with. The rope is not nearly as long when you come off the bench. You know, if I go 0 for 3, 0 for 4 in my first couple of minutes, that might be it. When you're a starter, you know you're going to get, you know, extended minutes, and you can get into a slow start, i.e. Jason Tatum. if he had a bench rope, this guy would never be playing because his first quarters have been dreadful. But it's tough for a star to do that, you know, at the latter part of their career, to not get the minutes and not get the rope that they're used to getting.
I apologize if you've been asked this question before. I'm sure you have. First time we speak. Kobe Bryant, rookie. You're on that Laker team.
Second year for me with him.
Okay. So what was he like in his early days?
So this is before Kobe became Kobe. I mean, he still played behind Eddie Jones at that time. I think he averaged maybe 17, 18 minutes a night that year that I played with him. The year before us, I think he had that air ball in Utah in the playoffs. Yes. And, you know, Kobe was as driven a guy as I've ever seen. I said it back then when I played with him that I thought it was the closest thing to Michael Jordan that we'll ever see. He sat on the plane. He rarely spoke. He would write rap music, and he would watch Michael Jordan highlights, not just basketball highlights, interview highlights. If you notice, he tried to speak like Michael Jordan.
Yes.
The only thing this guy wanted was to get as many titles and be Michael Jordan. That's it. That's all he wanted. And I remember after practice, we play one-on-one. And if I said, if I didn't say I'm leaving, we would stay there until I don't know when. Like, he would literally keep playing till midnight. If we had a 1 o'clock practice, it didn't matter. That's all he wanted to do was work on his game. I saw nobody work harder. I saw nobody more dedicated to the game than Kobe Bryant.
So when you say he's watching the interviews, is he watching to learn or watching to kind of like emulate the way he speaks?
I think emulate the way he speaks.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like some of his celebrations when he'd go to a knee and like his mannerisms were very similar to Michael Jordan. That's all he wanted to be. And he wanted to be better than him. I remember we went to Chicago the year we were playing him, and the guy was like, I can't even say a kid in a candy store. I mean, he was, it was like seeing Santa Claus when you're 4 years old and you believe in Santa Claus. That's what he was. Like, Michael Jordan was Kobe Santa Claus. He would go absolutely bonkers being in his presence.
Would you guys rib him? Like, yo, man, you don't need to be watching all this stuff. Like, this is a little bit too obsessive. Were guys making fun of him for that?
No, we were too busy playing cards on the plane. So he was just sitting by himself. But I would go, you know, sit next to him at times. And that's what he was doing. I'm telling you, he wanted to be Michael Jordan more than anything in the world.
Is that, you know, you played with so many great players, Houston with T-Mac and Yao. We talked about Denver and Detroit and LA. Is there one team that you feel like fell short? Like the one team that you're like, man, if things would have gone a little differently, if this guy wasn't hurt, if we, you know, like that one what if team, is there one that sticks out?
Well, my second to last year, Juwan Howard got hurt. We beat Dallas two in a row in their barn to start the series. So we were up two up on the road, and Juwan Howard didn't play in the series. And we were playing great basketball. That was with Yao and McGrady and Bob Sura and Dave Wesley. That was disappointing. But like the Sacramento thing, you already went over. When I got traded, I knew that team was on an uprise, and they traded Jay Will for Mike Bibby the same summer that I got traded. Cause I remember running into Jeff Petrie when we got Mike Bibby, and I was like, wow, this is something. I mean, no disrespect to Jason Williams, but Mike Bibby at the time was an all-star caliber player. And I knew that was going to be an unbelievable deal. So I got excited. And then I get a call, you know, a month later that I'm gone. So that hurt because I had some very deep relationships with guys, and I knew that team, and we know how close they were. Game 7 with the Lakers, they had some opportunities. They didn't get it done. And I know that if I was there, I would have had an opportunity maybe to help, and that would have been incredible for me. But again, and then Detroit, you know, I was a free agent. They won the year after I left. So addition by subtraction, apparently. But I had two good years there, and then missing that championship year was a bit painful. Very happy for all my guys that were on that team, but I just missed a championship there, so that hurt.
When did you start to think about TV work, about media work? When did that like start to percolate in your brain?
Probably 3 or 4 years before I retired. Okay. You know, every time we had a game on national TV, I'd make a point to go say hello to the announcers, meet the producers, and just kind of get my name in there. And a lot of guys at ESPN helped me out. I remember, you know, Mike Breen, one of the best in the business, you know, he had mentioned my name to ESPN, and Dave Pasch is one of my great friends now. And these guys, you know, you got to get your name out there. And I knew that was something I wanted to do since the eighth grade. The NBA got in the way. I didn't think I'd play in the NBA, but I was fortunate enough that ESPN gave me an opportunity and got to do it for 14 years.
Wait, originally you wanted to be a broadcaster before a player?
Well, yeah, in eighth grade, I did in a speech class, I did a sports cast. So I just set up a camera And I did like a nightly 3-minute, you know, sports cast, and I did all the writing and all that. And my teacher gave me like the perfect score. And I was like, I didn't like school. And this was the only thing that I ever did well. And she's like, you should really think about getting into this business. And I remembered it, and it was something that I always wanted to do.
Is that something when you retire, like, do they send you to a school of some sorts or like a seminar, or do you just transition right from playing to on air?
Yeah, you go right on. I mean, when I went up to ESPN for the first time, I did ESPN News, and I thought it was just like a dry run, like you said. Like, and my buddy calls me, he goes, oh, you got the job at ESPN? I go, what are you talking about? He goes, I just saw you on ESPN News. I'm like, I swear, I thought that was like just a dry run to see how you did. You know, thankfully I didn't curse, or I might not have ever had a job.
What do you think of the current state of NBA broadcasting / journalism?
I'm not going to name names. I think there's a lot of mediocrity out there. There's a lot of guys I love. My biggest problem is, you know, where's the decorum? And like, you know, if you work for ESPN or Fox or TNT, like, you represent that company as a whole. And to see some of the way these guys act, getting into Twitter fights with players, going on the floor and picking fights with players, cursing, and, you know, just being inappropriate. A lot of guys, there's too big of a rope for that. I just think there should be more professionalism, off the field, you know. I don't understand how guys get away with that, because I, you know, back when I started, and that was only, you know, 16 years ago, that was very important. I think if you did something that, you know, shed some a black eye on your company that you work for, you to potentially be gone. And that's not the case now. I think it's more like, hey, we just want more attention to you. Whatever happens is kind of good for the business. And I don't really like that. You can't get into fights with players and do these types of things. I just don't understand.
Why do you think ESPN has never been able to get really close to TNT in terms of the studio team? They've tried so many different, you know, variations, yeah. And TNT has had the same crew, just adding Shaq, you know, but that was it. Why do you think they've never been able to figure it out?
Charles Barkley. I mean, there's only one Charles Barkley, because he makes that show. And if he's off that show's not nearly as watchable. And look, Ernie Johnson's unbelievable host. I mean, he keeps the reins on these guys, and he's brilliant. But it's just Charles, man, and they have fun. They're it's like a variety show. It's not, look, if you want to go get into X's and O's and really find out about basketball, that's not the show for you. It really isn't. But it's an entertaining show. And I think ESPN they're too serious. We were always going by script, because I did that show for six years with Magic Johnson and Mike Wilbon and Stuart Scott. Too scripted, you know. Hey, we're going to go on the A block. This is what we're doing. We got to get this, and we got it. It's like these guys just—they have fun. Like I saw Shaq was like late, and they started the show, and they just, and bring him in. Like ESPN would go absolutely bonkers if a guy was late and he didn't show up. I mean, they'd freak out. And TNT's just like, hey man, it's regular life stuff. Let's roll with it. And they have a great time, and it really, really is entertaining to watch.
I'm putting you a bit on the spot here, but just curious, like ultimate 3-man booth plus a sideline reporter. You could take current
that I could work with?
You could work with, yeah. What's the ultimate? It could be current.
It's very difficult. Past. I mean, I'll do it with guys that I haven't worked with, because I've gotten a chance with Mike Green Day Pash, Mike Tirico. I mean, These guys are incredible. I like Ian Eagle.
Love him.
I never worked with Ian. I think he's a great guy. His son does a good job too. But Ian is, I think Ian's the best. I would love to work with Ian. And sideline reporter. Does it have to be an NBA sideline reporter?
No, go ahead.
I go with Melanie Collins, just because I think she's hot.
All right, fair enough. I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate it. You've never done, did you do sideline once? I think you, didn't you and Dave one time flip a coin to see who would interview Greg Popovich, right? Yeah.
I did pop. So I think I said something like, So where'd you eat last night? And because I think we were in New York maybe or something. And he said some Italian, and I said, all right, did you go Merlot or cab?
And that was good. I'm sure he appreciated that.
Know you have, no, he didn't want to talk basketball.
No, you got to go different. I know you have to run, so we'll end on this if we can. I'm assuming we're speaking on a Thursday afternoon. I'm assuming the Celtics aren't going to pull off one of the great, you know, upsets and win this series against Miami. A, are you surprised ultimately that it's Miami, Denver in the finals? And B, can I get your analysis as to how this is going to play out?
Well, I'll go back to number one. I honestly believe that Boston can pull this off.
Wow. Okay.
I really do.
Wow.
I think they're the better team. I know Miami's playing unbelievable basketball. But I think Boston can really do this. I mean, isn't it going to happen at some point? Someone comes back from a 3-0? It's got to. Now, I know they've gotten only – it's only been, what, three or four times that they've even gotten to game seven. But look, Boston wins tonight. Miami goes back to basically a must-win game at home.
Yeah,
that's tremendous pressure. And, I mean, they got one guy, I mean, Jimmy Butler, that's kind of a handle scorer type of guy. Now, look, Martin is playing out of his mind. Is it Caleb or – I don't know which one it is.
Yep.
Out of his mind. I mean, Duncan Robinson's kind of reemerged at times. But look, Boston's got a ton of guys that can do – they can do this. And they look focused the other night because I knew they would. I told all my friends here at Sherwood to bet the Celtics 100%. They got embarrassed. And they showed what type of team they are by doing that. They could have mailed it in and got swept and everybody could have said what they wanted. They showed up and we saw what kind of character they had. I do believe that they could do this. Now, I'm not saying they're going to do this, but I believe they can do it.
Wow.
And whichever team comes out, I think Denver wins. The Joker is absolutely incredible. He was MVP in my mind again, and that's not a slight to Joel Embiid, who's terrific. But when you take a guy that they have the number one offense in the NBA and he goes off the floor and they are literally the worst, that's all I need to hit. That's it. That is it. He'll take 8 shots in a game. He'll take 28 shots in a game. Whatever it takes, he gets his guys involved. He rebounds. He is an incredible player, and he's playing at a level, obviously, that's off the charts. And I think Denver is going to beat whatever team it is. But don't be surprised if it's the Boston Celtics.
Wow. Do you want to go out on an actual limb and say Boston's winning the series?
That's all I've heard. I got nothing to lose. I'm not working. So, I honestly do believe it. I think it's going to happen someday, 3-0. Someone's coming back. They're the better team. I think everybody will agree. They're not playing that way right now. They did in game 3. But I think they can pull this off. I really do believe it.
I love it. Okay, very last thing, because you're keeping it real here. I was debating with the Showtime guys. It was Steven Jackson, Paul Pierce, and Boogie Cousins. Who would you rather have on your team, Jamal Murray or Drew Holiday? I said Jamal Murray. They all said I was crazy. They all said Drew Holiday. Who's right now?
Well, I don't think you're crazy at all. I think they're totally different players.
Yeah.
I mean, Jamal Murray is offensively far more gifted than Drew Holiday. And I love Drew Holiday. It's like, I hate when we have to say, who do you like? That means you hate the other guy.
No.
It's not the case.
You just got to pick
one. Everybody does that. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, I think Joker's better than Embiid. Whatever. Different players. Drew Holiday, great defensive player. But Murray, man, that guy's on fire. And they're different. You know, Drew Holiday, much better defensively than Murray. Murray's much better offensively. So it depends on what team I have. If I have a bunch of great defense around me, give me Jamal Murray. If my defense stinks, I'll take Drew Holiday.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you, John. I really appreciate it. Good luck out there. I hope you beat Chandler Parsons and take all his money.
All right. I appreciate it. Good to be with you.
All right. That was great stuff. Really appreciate John Barry's time. Great insight. Thought he told it like it is, kept it real, enjoyed his take on, you know, the TV landscape and the personalities and the difference between ESPN and TNT. Seems like he misses it a little bit, but still very much has his finger on the pulse. And I'm very curious to see if his prediction for the Eastern Conference Finals actually plays out. It's currently, as we are speaking right now, 3-1 in favor of the Miami Heat. If the Celtics are able to pull this off, it would be historic. And you'll be able to say that you heard it first from the great John Barry. So thank you very much to John for his time, for his insight, and for his prediction. We'll see if it comes true. Thanks to all of you for your support. Some great pods as of late. Hope you're enjoying what we're doing over here. Conversations with the likes of Bob Costas, Jason Williams, Action Bronson, Mike Brown, Coach of the Year Mike Brown, Michael Carter Williams. That was a great one as well. Marshall Glickman, the CEO of EuroLeague, and they just wrapped up their championship this past weekend. Congratulations to Real Madrid. So a lot of great stuff, a lot of eclectic stuff, and we've got a lot more coming your way as well. For now, though, we shall say goodbye. Thank you very much to John Barry. Thanks to the production team. Thanks to all of you. Please continue to download, rate, subscribe, review, all those good things and more. Until next time, have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.